You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
All right, you guys, welcome to this week's episode of Temple Hoop Podcast. I am your co-host, Coach Maples, here as always with Jordan and Kings. Kings, my boy, what is going on?
Going good, man. Shoot, we just got through a battle with the Nuggets. praying for a Cat 40 ball, man. We need it to get out of Denver, man. That home court for Denver is crucial. It's crucial.
Very, very good. Jordan, what's going on, my guy?
We're here, man. Oilers with the W tonight. We're good. You know, my NHL picks are looking a lot better than NBA, so that's where we're at right now.
All right, let's go right in with that because you have an interesting pick for tomorrow's game in this series.
Yep.
Memphis and the Lakers. Lakers, after stealing one in Memphis in game one, come back, win again in game three to go up 2-1, 111-101. Anthony Davis, 31-17. LeBron, 25-9-5. On the Grizzly side, kudos to Ja Morant, 45-13-9 with a messed up hand. Jaren Jackson, foul trouble, turnover, probably one of the worst games I've ever seen him play. Didn't have it. Dylan Brooks talked a lot, didn't back it up, hit LeBron in the nuts second quarter, was done for the game, did not get suspended, much to the happiness of Laker Nation due to his production this series. Start around the horn, man. Kings, what do you think about this series after game three?
Lakers in control like they have been since game one. They're just in control of the series. You know, Bron's kind of not having pushing it. I mean, he hasn't had to really. You know, it's one of those things where whole different series if Adams and Clark is there, those Bron at the 5 minutes would be a lot worse. If those two were there, there'd be a lot more to be concerned about because you'd have to play Bamba and that size advantage goes away. But in a long series, when you have the size advantage like the Lakers do, when, you know, you have the better players, like the Lakers have the two best players in the series, bro. Like, it's just the Grizzlies are missing two guys who would have helped slow down said players. Like, that's just too much to overcome, bro. Like, you just can't overcome that, right? And the fact is Dylan Brooks actively shoots them out of the game sometimes. So I say sometimes to be generous, but it's just too much going for them.
13 for 40 for the series. Continue. 13 for 40
for 13 for 40. I mean, guys like Dennis have – and, like, you know, obviously Malik, he's been streaky. He can prone to go off. But guys like Dennis, for example – he hasn't even got it going really offensively. I mean, credit to Grizzlies' length at the rim, but, you know, even some of the Lakers guys could even play better and use some of that home court advantage. TBJ, Malik, you know, they come out and hit seven threes. And Malik comes out and hits seven threes next game. You know, that's a blowout. You know what I'm saying? And that's always that's always a possibility, you know, and that's why he gets missed. That's always a possibility. So it's like the Lakers are really just in control. You haven't even had that vintage LeBron game yet. You know what I'm saying? It's just – I think the Grizzlies will make the next game tough. You know, I don't think they should, you know, I think they should have some type of level of confidence after the game three that they were able to battle from being back down for so much, seeing how Ja moved and played on the hand. I think they should have confidence going to game four. But ultimately, bro, I mean, bro, it's like the King series. And I said, bro, the Sacramento Kings are not beating Stephen Curry. Like, if the Lakers are healthy, the Grizzlies are not beating LeBron James. Like, I'm sorry. That's not happening, bro. It's not happening.
I think you raised a really good point. One, the front court, just having a thin front court has given the Lakers so much more versatility lineup-wise. I think that's hurt the Grizzlies. Also, what I'm not surprised at all by Dylan Brooks. He does this every year in the playoffs. It's just offense is going to tank. The team's key on him more. I'm really surprised Desmond Bain has been this bad. You know, he's taking a big step forward with his ball handling and shooting. Just what do you think has been his issue this series? Lakers have probably been keying on him more. I think an underrated part of Dennis's defense is his ability to chase shooters around. He has high fatigue. So what do you think about the Desmond Bane performance three games in? That's been good.
I mean, that's the thing. Is Dennis has a great ability to chase. I mean, we saw it in the regular season, right, when he held Bane's. Bane had a horrible game when he was matched with Dennis. And that's kind of what you've seen Ham use that Dennis a type of ability of. I pointed out game one, I knew Ham was serious when he put Vando on Tyus and then he put Dennis on Luke. You know what I mean? Any three-point guy, we need to chase. Dennis kind of feels – it's crazy. Dennis feels that point of attack role, and he feels that KCP chaser role at the well. He's so fast with his feet, and he's a competitor. He has a lot of heart. So it takes those type of guys out of the game. Because they're, you know, a lot of guys don't like running. You know what I mean? They don't like running. They don't know how to navigate screens, even if they can run. And Dennis is really good at navigating screens. He's quick. He has great foot speed. So even when you catch the ball, it's hard to beat him off the dribble. So, you know, I mean, people like, you know, Lakers fans, it's just annoying. People complain about players getting minutes, but it's like you understand team roles. It's not a shocker, or like, you know what I mean? Like, if you don't have Dennis, if you had to play Lonnie Walker, this is 2-1 Memphis. You know what I'm saying? Like, that might be me just being respectful. You know what I'm saying? So people have to value the little things like that. So that's really what's hurting Bane, man. He's having guys who can chase him, whether it be Dennis, you know, even Reeves. Reeves is not fast, but Reeves is disciplined and he's smart. And you know what I mean? And he knows where to be position wise. So having those guys chase him, and then even D'Lo. Even though D'Lo's not the fastest, he has a lot of length, and D'Lo's kind of crafty. Right. You know, when he's trying to contest, he does a good job of just moving his arms and staying big and being big to just not give you a clean look. So the Lakers have a lot good guard movement is hurting Bane, but that point of attack really outside of Dennis, there's not much of a threat at the point of attack, which is why Ja is able to do what he do.
Right.
Even Tyus to a certain extent.
Right. Jordan, your take on this series in game three and just moving forward.
Yeah, I mean, we all expected the Lakers to come out the way they did, especially after, you know, everything I was said with Dylan Brooks, right? And, like, that was the dumbest thing ever. Like, you don't poke the bear, dude. You know, it's just something that is, you don't go up to a Hall of Famer and say, like, I don't respect you till you drop 40. That was one of the dumbest things I've ever heard. Like, I respect the competitiveness and stuff, but you don't say that, dude. You know what I mean? And it worked for the Lakers. But the one thing I have an issue with the Lakers is that this isn't just this game. It's all year, dude. They get complacent. And once they get complacent, they lose. Like, game two, they played complacent the entire game, and the Grizzlies won. And then for game three, quarters two through four, like, they were up 36-9 and ended up only winning 102-92. They gave up 81 points in the – or I'm sorry, 83 points in the final three quarters. I think that gave the Memphis Grizzlies a lot of momentum coming into this game because they're like – they were dead in the water, dude. They should not have been in that game at all. That should have been an absolute blowout. The Lakers should have put their foot on the Grizzlies' neck and taken them out and made a statement. But instead, they let him get confidence, and they let him get in the game. And Ja Morant scored 22 straight points, which is absolutely incredible. And now Ja is probably – they can't guard me. It was kind of like what we saw with De'Aaron Fox today against Golden State. Like, he finally realized
– well,
guard me.
Well, I'll say this. I mean, my rebuttal to that is NBA games are long, 48 minutes. So you get up that early. You see a lot of times where teams jump out early and teams make it close late. Also – I think me and Kings before the series was like, they're going to have an issue with Ja off the dribble like 29 other teams do. he's that special off the bounce. So I would take it as a game-to-game situation. I think the Lakers are out for the kill. Dylan Brooks thing, I think he's just leaning into character. I think his end game is he wanted Bron to make it a one-on-one game and try to take him out that way, but Bron just wasn't going for it. I think that's what Dylan Brooks' angle was, but Bron is obviously too smart for that. I mean, you know – Dylan Brooks is nothing compared to the Lance Stevenson antics. So I'm sure Brown wasn't moved. Lance Stevenson was literally blowing in his face in the middle of a game. So I mean,
you don't disrespect.
Yeah, I mean, I hear it, but I don't think Brown was moved by that. And he's like said that much as such. He would have been saying something to him before the game, and that was that. So it is what it is. Then Dylan Brooks made it worse. I think he lost his credibility when after he lost. Nah, I'm not gonna talk. At least to think about Draymond. Whenever Draymond getting anything, he gonna never
get the Draymond is 10 toes. He don't matter.
That's what I'm saying.
Suspending, he coming back. Same thing. He almost got tossed out this game.
Yeah. That's why I was like, it's really levels to the goon stuff. Brooks, you're not there yet. What are you just real quick predictions for game four? I got the Lakers going up 3-1. Jordan.
I like the Grizzlies to win, man. I think they're gonna go back to Memphis 2-2. I honestly think they gave him confidence, man. And like we kind of saw the same thing with the Bucks and Heat in game two. Bucks were up 30 and they kind of let Duncan Robinson cook in garbage time, and they gave him so much confidence going into game three. And then game three, he goes off again. Like you can't give guys confidence, man.
I'll say this. So my thing about game two was the Jaren Jackson AD matchup is 2-1 AD, and that's kind of where the game is. If AD approaches the game at a certain level, or Jaren Jackson just can't beat him there.
Yeah, but
that was just the one game in game two where for some reason AD wasn't engaged all the way. But if AD reaches a certain level and comes out into his peak game and Jaren Jackson plays his best game, AD is still levels ahead. And that's, you know, that's kind of how I feel about that situation. Like how AD approaches the game means a lot. Kingsley, you got in game four.
I got the Lakers, man. I get the confidence stuff, all that, but LeBron James, bro, they said the same thing about the Indiana Pacers 2018. They said the same thing about the Boston Celtics that same year. They said the same thing about the Rockets, the Blazers, blah, blah, blah. At the end of the day, the next game comes. LeBron James, if he feels things getting out of whack, he's going to take the ball, walk up the court, and he's going to say, "Win, beat us in the half-court game." That's what's going to happen. So all that momentum, all that stuff don't mean nothing. If you can't execute in the half-court, you're not winning. Like, it's just that simple. And we know Memphis can't win in the half-court. 3-1 Lakers. That's all I got.
There we go.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart, the seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Let's move on up about 350, 400 miles up Highway 5. San Francisco, Golden State Warriors barely tied the series against Sacramento, 2-2. De'Aaron Fox goes crazy, late fourth quarter, couldn't quite, got trapped on the game winning play, kicked to Harrison Barnes, got a very sexy look, back rim, classic game. We got some very, very bozo performances from a couple Hall of Famers. Or a Hall of Famer, Steph Curry, who was a Chris Webber, against to call timeout with none left, gets him a free throw. Then with chance to eke out the clock, the clock's at 28. Steph goes with like 12 seconds left, throws up some nonsense, give the Kings a full 10 seconds, just down one instead of killing the clock. They got a great look. Harrison Barnes can't knock it down. 2-2. It's a best of three now. Sac has two games at home if needed. Just my thoughts on this series. Just one, I just want to get this out. I said before the playoffs, I'm staying on it. De'Aaron Fox is first team all NBA. I'm going to stand on that. If he's not, we riot. That's the main thing. Secondly, Sabonis and Herter, man, Like, Sac is up 3-1 if they get anything from those. They're not getting anything of – those are two big contributors from them throughout the season. They're getting nothing from them, and the series is still tied 2-2. So, I'm not saying I'm confident because I think Draymond has a lot to do with the way Sabonis is struggling. But Herter is missing a lot of wide-open shots. That's the that you worry about if the moment's too big for him. On the other end, Steph is having a crazy series, as expected. Kings don't have a great defense. He's averaging 30 a game on like 49, 42, 90 splits. So he's just they haven't been able to do much with him when he's on the floor. Other note, Draymond and Kerr decide to bring Draymond off the bench. They met and decided to come off the bench and not mess up what was flowing. Draymond embraced it. Ends up, he actually took 14 shots, which I'm shocked. He was only 3 for 14, but he took 14 shots. 12 points, 10 rebounds, 7 assists. But the big thing is continues to make Sabonis obsolete, which is a big part of what the Kings do. I go to you, Jordan, this time. Your thoughts on this series as it goes into a best of three, 2-2. What do you see? Who you got going forward?
Yeah, I mean, I like the Kings in this series just because they had home court advantage. And I said, like, I thought the home team was going to win every game in this series. Like, yeah. Kings held serve. Warriors held serve. Like, this series has gone exactly as anticipated, in my opinion. So now this series was always, can the Warriors win a road game? And I just don't know if they can, you know what I mean? And you're absolutely right, dude. Sabonis isn't playing good, and this series is still tied. You know, Keith wasn't playing good the first three games. He kind of busted out of his shell today. The thing with Kevin Herter is, like, we saw in the three-point contest, like, he doesn't really perform under the lights, man. Like, he shot worse than – he was the worst three-point competitor out there. And with that being said, like, Davion Mitchell's kind of outplayed him too, you know what I mean? And he's kind of – I know Steph's going off, and Steph's a Hall of Famer, dude. He's going to go off against anybody. That's just what he's going to do. But Davion's making him work for it, dude. Like, he's running with him. He's running. He's playing physical with him. And I think that's really kind of sparked the Kings. Game three, we kind of saw them come out, and I thought they were a little shell-shocked by the hostility of the crowd. I think the crowd kind of took them out of it really early because of their inexperience, right? And then game four, you know, De'Aaron Fox was kind of like, okay, this is nothing normal. Like, I mean, this is normal, and these guys can't guard me. And De'Aaron Fox kind of took the game over and did what he does. I do think that it's going to be important, though. The Kings have to – they got to knock down these open shots, man, because –
man, they're missing so many open threes, bro. Yes.
A lot of open shots. And on top of that, like, I feel like the Kings are playing better defense as a team than the Warriors. They're making the Warriors shoot tougher shots, right? But the Kings are missing a lot of open shots. And I think that's the biggest difference here. They probably should have won today. And I know it took like a meltdown from the Warriors, but
I think to your point, everything you said, just some numbers here. I mean, you got, let's see, 58. You got, you know, 80 points between, you know, Poole, Clay, and Steph. You know, so you withstand that flurry and still have a chance to win at the end. You got to get something from Herter and Sabonis, like you said. I mean, that they didn't turn the ball over on the road. Only had 10 turnovers for the whole game. I mean, they played a solid game. A couple bad things down the stretch, but they played a solid game. They just couldn't get that last play at the end. Harrison Barnes, Warrior fan, still traumatized from the last three games of the 2016 Finals. They had definitely had a laugh at that. Kings, things that you've seen this far in this series and kind of what you expect going forward.
I mean, you said Herter don't like the lights, but I want to remind y'all, Game 7 against Philly, Herter, 27 points, big 27, help close them out. You know,
that's Philly, though, man.
Against your Bucks, man. Game, you know, you remember that game. Against your Bucks, man. Game 4, that win, no Trey, big game by him too, big 15. So Herter's been there, man.
He's at big 15. If you could give the Kings 15, they would have won today.
Exactly. That's my point. That's my point, right? I said big 15. If he gives them 15 on good efficiency, that's a W. So that's what I'm saying. Like, Herter, you know what I'm saying? He's been there. He's played in big games. And I have faith in him hitting shots, big shots, more than I have than Sabonis is pretty – I think he – I get why Mike Brown has to play him, but he's unplayable pretty much, honestly. Like,
the lin minutes have been better, honestly.
Lin minutes have been much better. So, I mean, he's pretty much unplayable, but I get Mike Brown, he's doing a great job coaching, saying all the right things, making sure everybody's engaged, you know, playing guys how he needs to play them. He's just done a hell of a job. He's out coached Kerr, I think, in my opinion. Just certain things just haven't gone the King's way. I mean, again, that look for Harrison, that's a clean look. I mean, he hits it. It's a whole different. I mean, you know what I mean? There's a whole different. We have a whole different narrative. So
imagine Warriors. The Warriors win this series. The Kings look back, bro. We were up 3-1 off one wide. We were wide open jumper away from 3-1.
You know what I'm saying? Like it's one of those. So it's like, but I think the Kings are young enough to where that's not going to bother them. And they feed so much off the home crowd, so much off the energy, so much off the, you know, light the beam. Like, that stuff, they really feed off that. Like, that's really their identity. It really energizes them. Like, a lot of Warrior fans saying in six. I said six or seven. And the reason why, and now I'm going to seven because, man, there's no, I just know I can see the Kings lose game five, bro. I just think Monk and Horder will have big, big games. I think Monk, Horder, Fox all go for 20 plus. Ooh. I think you'll see Murray keep up his scoring, get into the teens. I think Sabonis will give you double digits. You'll get some contributors from other players here and there, Lyles, Lynn. I just think the Kings will answer. I mean, that you saw it this game, bro. It's like Warriors were throwing some kill shots, man. I mean, Klay, Curry were throwing some shots, and the Kings came back every single time. Like, they are not phased by the offense. They are not phased. So I'm like, I look at them like, bro, I can't pick against them in SAC right now. Like, in the game seven, you 30 unanimous strength in numbers, I pick them in the coin flip. But this game five, I'm not picking them, bro. I can't do it.
The fact that it was Steph doing that bonehead stuff at the end of the game was wild to me. They escaped, but woo wee.
And the thing is, Poole is still not good. I don't think people understand. Like, he has some tough layups. I'll give him credit. He has some tough layups, took some shots.
His defense reeks, bro.
And he makes some terrible decisions, bro. Like, it's just like, what are you doing? And it's like, if he's doing that at home, there's no way he's going to play any better than what he could have played these past two games at SAC on game five. It's not happening, bro. It's not happening. So, you know what I mean? Like, it's just not happening.
All right, so
real quick.
Jordan likes the Kings.
Yep.
I like Warriors and seven. Kings likes Warriors and seven.
Real quick. I know we, like, have mixed feelings about plus minus. Like, we can debate that stat. It's a hell of high water, right? But Sabonis and Harrison Barnes had the worst plus minus in this entire series of both teams.
Well, the Sabonis thing matches the eye test. I got to pay more attention to Barnes. I think Barnes is 22% from three for the series. He's just not a big moment player. It just is what it is. Some guys step up.
He also plays a lot of his minutes with Sabonis too.
Sabonis is just, Draymond's just, you got an all-time defender, and Sabonis weaknesses feet right into Draymond's trench. Doesn't like physicality. He's not faster than Draymond, and he's not a 3-point shooter. So any impact he would have would come off posting up or trying to beat Draymond off fundamentals. And we've seen, this doesn't happen with Draymond. He's too great of a defender. So I think it's just a rough matchup, and he's got to try to survive and see how that goes.
There's only one guy that puts Draymond in the blender, and that's 34 in Milwaukee.
Siakam did it once.
Siakam gave him some hell too. Other than Siakam and it's really the athletic force.
Athletic force. Yeah.
The Giannis's, those guys, the Zions, those guys who are just like physical freaks and explosive at the four position. Man, they give Draymond fits, bro.
That's basically what it is. Moving out east. The most shocking series for me, I kind of want to talk about this to you guys, see what you guys think. What's crazy is I got to tip my hat to Kings. Even when it was going good for the Cleveland Cavaliers all season, he was telling us all year that two big stuff was not going to fly because they couldn't shoot. And I got to give it to him. It's biting them in the ass right now. They fall again, go down 3-1 to the Knicks, lose both games in New York. Mitchell 5-for-18, LeVert 4-for-10, Garland was good, 9-for-16, 23-10. What's crazy about me is I think a lot of people underestimate strength for big fellas. Like, I said, be wiry and strong until you're this. Jared Allen, 40 minutes, 4 rebounds. Mobley, 35 minutes, 7 rebounds. Mitchell Robinson, 11. Toppin, 8. Hartenstein, 8. Josh Hart, 7. I mean, they're just getting their behind kicked on the glass. And I think that's a key stat when a game is being played this close, because the possessions come that much more valuable.
Yep.
So when you can't dominate the glass, that's where things get out of your favor. Munson's been special. Julius Randle, my agenda's in the mud, throwing up all over himself. Another time in the playoffs is hurting, but he may have another shot in another series. So we'll see what happens. Just, man, other thing, I know we've been hard on Luka on this pod, but I'm saying it again. Please don't ever tell me he's never had help. Because I'm looking at Jalen Brunson. This is a special player. What you doing in the playoffs, and he's doing it at Madison Square Garden, low-key the biggest stage in the league, putting on a show, I guess an elite defensive team, mind you, killing him at all three levels. Kings, I think all of us really, we connoisseurs of old-school basketball. What's the last point guard we saw with a post game like this, bro? Like, the footwork in the post is elite. Like, he's
J-Kid-type post game. Man. Thing, like, back and down. But it's Andre Miller's.
Yeah, it's an odd matchup, though. Is this not something you wait? Like, he's a 6-1 point guard with post moves, bro.
Yep.
But
physical, man. He's a physical guy.
Right. The whole series is physical. I think that's what the next thing. They're pretty much beating up the Cavaliers, in my opinion. That's like the foundation.
And that's the problem. Like, if you're playing big, you can't lose a physicality battle, bro.
Hello.
And that's
hello.
The issue that we have in Minnesota, bro. Like, everybody talks bad about one of our bigs from the trade, but he's not the one who's playing soft. Like, he battles in the trenches with Jokic, gets rebounds offensively and defensively, gets block shots and contest shots. He's not the one who's playing soft. So it's like, you fast forward to the East, and you go to the Cavaliers, and you're looking, you have Jared Allen, you have Evan Mobley. It's like, why are you losing the physicality battle? Like, they had to bench Julius Randle, and they still won because Brunson is physical enough to beat 2 7-footers. Like, look, I love the big man. We're in a renaissance. The best players are big. I think big men oriented team are going to win the title. Like, that's just, you know, if you look at the Lakers, I know they have Brown, but AD is going to be the reason they win this title. Like, I think that's been established. If the Lakers win, AD is the reason they win. We obviously have Joker. We obviously have Embiid, puncher's chance. If Boston loses to Milwaukee or Embiid, that kind of just seals the deal for wings versus bigs going forward, in my opinion. But you know what I'm saying? It's like, I get the big man thing, but you can't play two of them in this era, bro. Unless one of them. And even if one of them is a shooter, like, it's weird because you need one of them to shoot, and you need both of them to be physical, and you need one of them to guard perimeter players.
Yeah.
Like, that has, like, you need that. One has to be able to guard perimeter players, one has to be able to shoot, and they both got to be physical. Who has that in the NBA?
Bucks.
Only the Bucks. Only the Bucks. And that's the only reason why they're the only team that can get away with it, because they're the only could do all of those things with their two bigs. Nobody else can. So I'm like, you can't run that. You can't run that. If you're not filling those categories, you cannot use two bigs and get away with it, bro. Like, that's why I said they have to trade one. Everybody's like, oh no, Evan Mobley, KG. Can he score 20 and 10 before you talk about Kevin Garnett, bro? Please. Like, we're not even bringing up the passing. Like, people forget that Kevin Garnett could pass at a high level, but can he at least score 20 and 10 before you bring up Kevin Garnett? Yeah, somebody's like, oh, he can't be Tim Duncan, Giannis. He can be Kevin Garnett, as if Giannis is head and shoulders above Kevin Garnett.
Right.
Like, come on, bro. Like it's
fine. Giannis isn't head and shoulders above Tim Duncan.
You gotta show it about Timmy or KG, and you know, but you can't say that with no straight face, man. He on his way, but you need more time.
Yeah, go ahead, Jordan. What do you thought about this series so far?
Well, first of all, as a USC guy, I will not accept any Evan Mobley slander.
That's I love Mobley, man. I told people he'd be the best in the draft. I still believe that, but they need to get rid of Allen, bro. They have to do it.
I mean, yeah, I think the biggest issue is, like, I don't know if it's, like, the way that J.B. Bickerstaff coaches and, like, the schemes and stuff, but, like, Evan Mobley was a way better offensive player at USC than he is in the NBA. Which is, like, mind-boggling to me. I mean, he was a 40% three-point shooter at USC. He was a way – like, the offense ran through him. He initiated offense. He was electric defensively. And it's, like, we don't see any of that here. Like, I don't know. I just think the terms of this series, I think Brunson has a huge advantage because Devin Mitchell and Darius Garland are both not good defenders. So he's going to kill both of those guys.
Yep. That's the issue. Your two lead guards aren't great defenders, so the two bigs serve a purpose defensively. But the other thing the Cavs do, they get nothing from the wing too. That's another low key issue this year. They can't get anything from the wing. So that's the other thing.
And on top of that too, like, Kings is 100% right with the bigs. Like, they're not dominating the glass. They're getting bullied. They're getting pushed around. Like, Jared Allen was out there just running cardio today, dude. Like, he was useless. And this series is over, man. Like, I definitely think they got to make a trade because I don't see a way where they can get a productive 3-and-D wing. Because if you play Mitchell and Garland, you have to have an elite 3-and-D wing next to them. You have to. There's no way you can play around it. And I also think they kind of got to open up the offense and kind of let Mobley. Because right now their offense is Garland and Mitchell just kind of like going one on one and chucking up shots. I've never liked Mitchell's game, dude. I think he's a chucker. I never thought he was that great of a runner. I'm gonna be honest with you guys. When everyone
terrible. I disagree heavily. I've seen him have some big games in the moment. Like I said, like everybody thought I was copping. Please, we had this discussion with Brandon Ingram. I was like, bro, talk about his efficiency, bro. He played in the worst spacing in the NBA. If you were yelling at him about his efficiency, Mitchell's been doing the same thing. He played at worst, some awful spacing. A defensive, a Tibbs-led team is game planning around that. He got guys. It's like, hey,
you watch Utah too, though.
In Utah, he was a fit. They had nobody else to key off the bounce outside of Conley. That was by nature. But I'm telling you right now, Tibbs is like, take away the step back threes, push up into him, and just have him drive amongst when there's no space, force him into tough twos.
Yep.
And that's what they watch how they jam him so he can't get to that step back three he loves. He loves that step back. They won't let him get to it. It's a game plan thing. You got to give Tibbs his flowers on this one.
The Knicks are severely – Tibbs is severely out-coaching Bickerstaff. I mean, you could clearly see it.
Yeah, the experience thing is showing in the
– with the wish here, boy.
Yeah, with the coaching and the players, the experience is showing. Like, Mitchell's been there before, but Garland – Mobley, Okoro, like it's just, you know, it's definitely showing. I was shocked. So the two things I'll say that I missed on, I lowballed when I picked the Cavs in six. I lowballed Brunson's impact, which has been borderline superstarish. He's been the best player in the series. Do you guys agree or disagree?
I agree.
Yeah, and then, I did not know Josh Hart would have the impact he's had.
Yeah.
He's been incredible. Probably the best rebounding guard in the NBA. Every hustle play, he's there getting it. You saw that little sound bite. He telling Tibbs, I can go to hole 48, which means he's going to be a lifelong Nick. Now, that's all Tibbs had to hear. He's like, you damn. I don't care if you try to get Nikola Jokic. You are not trading Josh Hart.
You know, it's funny that him and Randall seeing the success they have on the team, you know, those are two of the guys that a lot of Laker fans don't like to bring up, you know, about the old core. You hear even Clarkson for whatever reason. I don't know why they bring him up, but you hear Clarkson, you hear the Kuzma still, you hear the Lonzo what ifs, but it's like you got guys like Josh Hart, you got guys like Randall logging in heavy minutes, impacting winning. Hart is a completely great winning player, can hit the open three. He's going to play hard-nosed team defense, going to rebound. He just does all the little things, and he does it at the guard spot, and he's a high IQ player. That's just big. And Brunson, bro, is Mavs. They kicking themselves, boy. Kicking
both themselves. Both Brunson and Hart, they were coached by the best basketball coach in the history of basketball.
Wait, this is Jordan loves some J. Wright. Go ahead, bro. I think he loves some J. Wright. Go ahead, bro.
Dude, I mean, dude, like every player that's coached under J. Wright, they like do all the little things right. They always do. Dante DiVincenzo does all the little things right. You know, like all these. Yeah. So, I mean, it's like you got to give them their flowers, man. And like Jalen Brunson is undersized, but you know, he's figured out a way to be effective. And you know, it's all J. Wright's doing. No, not all J. Wright, but he's
I'm about to say you. I get what you're saying, though. So that tree of coaching and understanding what's important to winning. I get that.
All those guards you just named, what do they have in common? High IQ, physical,
yeah,
crash pass, get in the paint, battle. Like that's if when you see players from a coaching system, coaching tree have the same traits. That's coaching. That is coaching because he instills the same foundation to right, all right. his players.
Yep. All right, let's stay in the East. Let's talk about the Bucks in the Heat. Me and Kings were at odds a little bit. He said without Giannis, he got the Bucks winning anyway. I did not. I know they were 11-9 without Giannis or whatever this season. I just despised that team. I think he is hiding some very shoddy roster construction outside of the big. I think they have bigs that match, but I don't love their athleticism outside of Giannis. And that's definitely showing in this series. He go up 2-1. Jimmy goes crazy. Jimmy may also be hurt. We'll see what happens. They blow out the Heat. They blow out the Bucks the last game. Duncan Robinson goes crazy. We haven't seen that in a minute. Jordan, we'll start with you. What have you seen in this series? What have you seen? What do you see moving forward? What do you want to see moving forward? Are you nervous at all about this being over in round one for your boys?
I definitely think Giannis is coming back for sure. And the market's saying it too. They're 5.5-point favorites right now. They closed 2.5 without Giannis. So I think Giannis is coming back. The crazy thing to me, though, is Miami was the worst team in points per game this year. They scored the fewest points per game in the entire NBA. Who's scoring the most points in the playoffs right now? The Miami Heat. 124 points per game, man. They're shooting almost 60% from three. You know, I know we like to joke around with Bud and how he lets open threes, but I mean, like, these guys, they haven't been able to knock down threes all year, and we got Jimmy shooting, you know, I don't know what his exact number is at.
Four for four last game.
66% from three, man. This is a 23% free throw shooter, three-point shooter, you know what I mean? So, you know, am I concerned? Yeah, but how concerned? I don't know. Like, they should win this series without Giannis, but it is a little concerning how lethargic they've been defensively. And, like, Jay Crowder, they trade all these second-round picks. Like, he can't even see the floor. He's been so awful. Like, he can't knock down shots. He can't defend. Like, he just doesn't know what's going on. Javon Carter, you know, this, for some reason, this dude just loves to, like, pull up and transition one on three and fucking excuse my language and take threes, like just boneheaded plays. Game two, what they did really well was they ran through Brook Lopez offensively and they really got him involved, and because nobody can guard him inside, not even Bam. Like, he can't defend, he's too small for Brook, and they went away from that in game two, but really, or game three, but really what flipped the entire game was the Bucks went on a 10-minute spurt from 5 minutes in the first quarter to about 6 minutes in the third quarter, where they only scored 9 points. And that's when Miami kind of blew it open. Drew started off really well, and then he kind of cooled off. And Chris got in foul trouble, so he was off the floor. And it was just a disaster, man. I don't expect the Heat to play that well again.
And so now, I have a question.
Yeah.
Without Giannis, Who's creating leverage off the bounce in Milwaukee consistently?
Drew.
Consistently?
Yeah, Drew was great in games 2 and 3.
I think Drew's the problem.
No, I'm not saying it's the problem. I'm saying the issue is. No, I'm not saying it's the problem. Like, they can't create disadvantages.
He's just not going to do it at enough of a rate.
Yeah, okay, yeah.
That's the issue. He's going to do it, but, like, it's like, him and Giannis doing it is good for him. You know, that's why they're able to be dominant with just those two doing it. But when you take out Giannis and the rate he does it and it's just Drew, it's like, you know, like there are times where I see them, like, you know, they go on a little run or they answer in Miami. It's Drew getting a tough basket into the rim, setting guys up. But it's like he can't do that enough times to where, you know, they can consistently keep it up. That's the problem.
And I think Chris was doing it to some extent, too. He just got in foul trouble in game three and kind of like like really hampered what he was able to be aggressive. And then like he really couldn't do much because he was off the floor for a lot of time, too. Like he only played, I think, 29 minutes in a game that should have been playing a lot more. But with that being said, I mean, Giannis has to come back. He was sitting there on the sidelines just like, bro, this they need me, bro. He's got to put on a Superman cape and get back out there because, yeah, man, this team is defensively. I mean, this last two games just shows you how great Giannis is defensively because without him on the floor, they look absolutely lost.
That's how great he is, period.
Yeah. Both, yeah. Especially defensively.
So you two, you still got the Bucks pulling us out?
Yeah, if Giannis comes back tomorrow, they're gonna win three in a row and close the series out.
Okay. If Giannis comes back, I got the Bucks. If not, I got Miami. Kings.
Bucks are gonna win, but you know, in the way I'm not shocked. I think people gotta remember playoffs are always about matchups. Yeah. And for years now, the Heat have just matched up with the Bucks well in the playoffs, bro. I mean, even the sweep that they did. Even the sweep that the Bucks had of the Heat, a lot of those games are tough. Giannis played badly. It actually took Bryn Forbes shooting lights out for them to get that sweep. Miami just plays them tough, bro. They play them tough. Miami just plays teams tough in the playoffs, period. I mean, regardless of how bad they look in the regular season, the Spo coach, Jimmy Butler, Miami team is just always going to give teams
fits. Right.
It's never going to be an easy series, no matter where you play them. So, you know, this is the Bucks. They're going to play this series. They're going to take the fight. They're going to take the lumps. But them getting through the series is really going to prepare them for the next series. I think you'll see the more dominant version of the Bucks if the Bucks pass them Heat, obviously, because the Heat can beat the Bucks. But if they beat the Heat and they get to next year, I think you'll see the more dominant version of the Bucks against the Knicks. And, I got – if the Bucks beat the Heat, and I think they'll beat them in six or seven, I can see this going seven for sure. I think they beat the Knicks in five because the physicality of the Knicks is not going to phase the Bucks. The Bucks love to play physical, and the Bucks are just a better team. So, you know, but the teams like the Heat, I mean, this is where you see the Bud coaching deficiency. I mean, Spo just coaches circles around Bud. Like, it's never close ever. You know what I mean? Even the sweep, again, it was Bryn Forbes. Open looks from Giannis, rim pressure. Like it wasn't, you know, Bud wasn't doing anything special. So it's true. It's like Coach Spo just coaches circles around Bud. So, I mean, it's going to be a dogfight, but Giannis comes back, they win. I think they could have won in seven without Giannis, even it would have looked more uglier. But Giannis comes back. I got the Bucks in six. I think they can rattle the next three.
All right. We'll see. Definitely going to be fun. Last one, a little bit of a somber note, man. One of the most anticipated series kind of became a laugher. Kawhi's knee injury held him out. Again, just I want your thoughts real quick before we get out of here, man. What do the Clippers have to do next? Obviously, I think this series is over. 3-1, even if Kawhi comes back, pulling off three in a row after sitting two games would be tough. I mean, the first two games were so good. Bunch of superstars going back and forth. So assuming that, you know, this ends 4-1, unless Westbrook pulls, you know, extends it with another great game. He's playing great, by the way. Shout out Westbrook. He's earned himself another contract. It was looking dicey for a minute. Somebody's going to throw him some bread. What do the Clippers do from here? In all seriousness, and I think anything's on the table personally. I just want to know what you guys think. Kings, I'll start with you. Where do the Clippers go from here? This is 2 years in a row. 3 years, really. Kawhi goes down, middle of the series. Looked like he was playing the best ball of his career offensively against the in that playoff run. Bangs knees with Ingles, torn ACL. Skips all last year. They lose in the play-in to the Pelicans. This year, they look like they're they get right. Kawhi outplays the Suns' big three, big four in game one. They go up 1-0 on the road. I don't even remember the play he got injured personally. I can't even pinpoint it on film. People put out a couple of clips speculating, but there's nothing concrete. So I don't even know what it is. Now it looks ugly, down 3-1. Season likely over after the next game. What's next for the Clippers for you, bro?
Hopefully trade Paul George for Karl Anthony Towns. That's what I hope. That, you know, hey, I told somebody, say, Karl Towns, knowing his years, if he plays with Westbrook against the Suns, this series probably tied up right now. they just needed another player. You know what I'm saying? Another player with some caliber. So it's like, hey, it's like the thing with the Clippers, bro. It's like both of these guys can't stay healthy at the same time, so they can't play together. And it's not even because on-court fit. It's from a availability standpoint. Because if one person's always missing, that puts a lot of strain on the other player when they're not there. And it's one of those things where neither of them are durable enough to withstand, you know, the other player not playing extended amounts of time. I think it's been years of evidence with this now. Because when Kawhi went down, Paul George broke down. When Paul George went down, eventually Kawhi wears down. You know what I'm saying? It's always one or the other. So it's like, You can't have two stars that are injury prone. You can only deal with one, right? So they have to trade one of them. And obviously they won't trade Kawhi. You have to see what Paul George can give you while before it's too late. I think it's good money with Westbrook right now. You got such good money with Westbrook in terms of the fact that he's been able to show that he can play well on this team.
He's available.
So he's always going to play there, which is going to keep you in contention, which is what Ballmer wants, right? And he can play well with Kawhi. I mean, him and Kawhi, a lot of people felt comfortable picking them over the Suns, right? So it's like, you know, you just need another guy. And you can get that other guy if you trade Paul George, right? You can get possibly a Levine. You can probably... You know, who knows how Jaylen Brown is. I mean, if you tell the Celtics, hey, Jaylen Brown's frustrated, you want Jaylen Brown for – you think the Celtics say no to that?
Right.
If Jaylen Brown's frustrated and wants to leave and you come up to him like, hey, we can give you Paul George for – you think the Celtics say no to that? You can get something for Paul George if you want to. But you just have to make the decision to be like, can this work? And I think they just have to say nah, and they just have to find another guy.
Point.
Ooh, Jordan.
Yeah, I mean, I was going to say, like, they got to blow it up. I'm looking at their salary cap situation, and, like, they're in
Barber does not care, bro. Probably. Yeah, that's like, the money's not an issue. I thought it would be, like, there's a number, the money's not an issue.
The problem is it makes it difficult to sign players. Yeah. So, like, they're over the cap, so, like, they can't really go out and sign anybody. Right. It's going to be difficult for them just to re-sign Russell Westbrook because they don't have his his bird rights, so like there's only so much they can offer him. You know what I mean?
They can't give him the TPE or the MLE. Cause new CBA, right?
Yeah.
You go so far with a cap, you can't give it. You don't have the MLE.
Yeah. So
I think what you're gonna see them do is those guys they sign to long term deals, which are good pieces that teams do want.
Yeah.
Like the Rose, you know
the only players they can really trade though is Norman Powell, Kawhi, Paul George, Zubac, Mann, Amir Coffey.
Norman and Mann will fetch something. I think you want to keep Zubac, but Norman and Mann will fetch something. Those are coveted pieces.
Marcus Morris, Batum, Covington, they're all unrestricted free agents. Eric.
They won't bring those guys. I don't think they'll bring those guys back.
Yeah, so I mean, like, really, because their salary cap's, like, basically all tied up. PG and Kawhi take up 80% of their cap.
Yeah. I think they'll I wouldn't trade Zubac, but you know he's a cheap top 10 center.
Yeah,
like back into the top 10 center. So I mean, he'll have value.
They got to trade Paul George.
I'm with Kings. Probably not Kawhi, because but he's the better of the two. But
if you're a team though, are you really trading for Paul George given the fact that like he hasn't been able to play?
But like I
who am I? That's what I'm saying. Where am I? Am I part of where my team is?
Exactly.
If I'm on the cusp, if I'm on the cusp of something, I will take the shot.
What if you go to the Knicks? What if you go to the Cavs? What if you go? The Celtics, who are like, we can't pay Jalen. I mean, we can pay Jalen Brown, but he doesn't really want to be here.
Exactly.
If you go to them and ask them for, like, they're not saying no to Paul George, bro. Like, they can't. Like, none of those teams can say no to him.
I get the Boston one, especially with if Jalen Brown does want out. But the Cavs, for example, like, if you call the Cavs, call you, hey, what do you want for Paul George? Like, what are you giving them? What do the Clippers want from the Cavs, honestly?
No, they don't. And that's what I'm saying. They don't want much, but you can go to the Knicks too. The Knicks too.
So what are you giving up from what would the Knicks give up?
Well, Knicks have picks from the, you know, they got a first from the
picks. You got RJ, you got Randall. You know what I mean? Like, you got picks and Randall. Like, you get the four that you wanted on your team. You get the tough four who's gonna be there, be durable, who's gonna be there, who can give you star production. You get picks, some picks back. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's teams that will want Paul George. Like, if they wanted to call up Minnesota and say, hey, we'll take Carl Anthony Towns for Paul George straight up, I'm pretty sure Minnesota will not say no to that trade. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's ways for them to get quality back that can fit the way they're constructed, that they can afford, and that will be on the floor.
Exactly.
It's just, are they going to do it? That's really what it comes down to. If they want to trade Paul George, they can get off Paul George. Like,
I'm just trying to see like a scenario that actually like works, that where they get equal value back.
I don't think they get equal value in terms of the skill set and the ceiling, but I think they get equal value in the terms of the availability and the floor. And it's just like, you have that, you keep Russ, you keep your shooters. It's like, you just need Kawhi to stay healthy and you have a contender. You know what I mean? Like, it's just that type of thing.
I tend to agree with Kings here. I think it's time to get off one of them. Paul George, probably the guy. You won't get the same caliber of player, but if you get a couple of good guys who are going to play 65, 70 games and be available for a playoff run, I think you do it. As far as Kawhi, man, I mean, he's already got a lot accomplished, so it's not going to be like he's the biggest what-if story. Like, that's like Penny Hardaway, Grant Hill. Like, he's not that bad, you know, but based on where we've seen him at his peaks, I feel like there's a lot of meat left on the bone for his career, if that makes sense. Like, from like the gap between where he is and where he could have been all time, based on where we saw him at his peaks, maybe one of the biggest in NBA history. But he's accomplished a lot, so I'm not going to say the biggest what-if ever. Because that's your, you know, your Grant Hills, Pennies, you know, guys of that nature. But between where he was and where he could have been, is big to me. Probably he's top 10, top 15 talent, and probably going to finish closer to like top 30, top 35.
Let me ask you,
top 10 talent,
Do you think his knees are just like absolutely cooked?
Well, it says a sprain, but they were like they hit the tear last year. I'm not saying it's a tear this time, but it just seems awfully fishy that we can't find the moment on film. I'm wondering if it's something accumulative, you think, Kings, like wear and tear? But he didn't look bad or not.
I mean, he does have the knee tendinopathitis situation, the long-term chronic knee issue. I think it's a combo of the fact that he's hurt himself. I think it's just Ballmer understanding that. People got to remember – Ballmer is willing to spend money, but he comes from the Microsoft, Bill Gates, stock market type of mindset. Like, I invested in Kawhi Leonard. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. I invested in getting this stadium. I understand if I have Kawhi Leonard. Like, he saw it. Kawhi Leonard and Russ were going toe-to-toe with the Suns, bro. Yeah. He saw it. So he's like, let's not kill Kawhi's body.
Right.
He has left. Let's not kill it on something that we can't go all the way because Paul George can't play. Kind of shut him down. Go in the offseason. We'll see if we want to change coaching staff. I mean, we'll see who we want to move off, whether it be Paul George, to see if we can get another star. And let's re-sign Russ because you saw the production Russ gave you. You can re-sign him for a very affordable deal, relative to his production with the players around him. Russ is going to elevate Zubac. because you already know Russ always elevates the big. Ask Anthony Davis. I know AD was mad at Russ, but AD was eating when Russ was there. Russ always makes the bigs look better. So it's like there's something there, and it's just where Ballmer is like, man, I can't risk the future for like a 5% chance
right
this year. You know what I'm saying?
Also, the business part of it, you know, it helps going into a new arena with a franchise player.
Yep, exactly.
You know what I mean? Like, you got something to sell, put on a marquee, reason for people coming to the game. So I think that also matters. Also why Kawhi isn't going anywhere.
We got a franchise player. We got a Hall of Famer. We got players around him that we can actually compete. It's way – people understand the whole Kawhi thing, and that's the reason why he's there. It's beyond competing for champions.
Right. Right. Like,
this is literally a business. The Clips are a business. They're literally like a stock market team.
All right, good stuff, guys. Make sure you follow RIP Kings, bruh, on Twitter. Make sure you follow Jordan Rules TSP. Again, shout out to Jordan. He's the one who blessed us with the video clips that you guys are loving. So, man, tomorrow, Lakers Grizzlies and Bucks Heat tomorrow.
Yep.
Man, Bucks season on the line. I don't think you can go down 3-1. Bucks, I really think the Lakers put a stranglehold on the Grizzlies tomorrow. We'll see. One thing I do want to bring up before we get out of here. I told these guys this before recording. I was in SoCal for AAU tournament. Had three different complete strangers come up to me talking about how much they love the pod. Man, I definitely appreciate that. I shared that with these two guys. They appreciated it. Please keep tapping in with us, man. Hit that follow, subscribe button. Give us feedback. We love it. We really enjoy, you know, connecting once a week, talking some hoop, and then putting it out to y'all to consume. So that is a true joy. We appreciate that you guys love it. And we're going to keep trucking. With that said, you guys be safe. And we are out of here. Word. Word.